there, and thank you for tuning in to this week's talk. We are so pumped you decided to join us. To get the full experience out of today's message, we recommend downloading or opening up the Church on the Ridge mobile app, where you can fill out notes and take them with you throughout the week. Without further ado, here's this week's talk.
I'm not Charlie. That's my dad, who Kyle was talking about. I do get to hang out with you guys tonight, which is exciting. We are continuing on in the series, and we're talking about how we can be free to be plugged in to Christ. Last week, my dad talked about that vacuum cleaner, right? And how sometimes we go and we do the vacuum so far, and then the cord, you know, gets unplugged. This week, I happened to be vacuuming, and I had the cord wrapped around. We have like this center section. It's like separates our kitchen from our living room. And I was vacuuming around, and I was going around, and I hit that point, and the cord was like fully taut. And in my head, I was like, "Oh, but I'm so close. I could probably get this." And then I remember my dad's talk, and I was like, I can't go in front of the church and give a talk on being plugged in if I try to get this and the cord gets unplugged. So my dad must have did a good talk because I went around and did it correctly and I did not get unplugged. So for all of us, we're going to talk tonight about how we can be free to be plugged in to Jesus. And you know what? Everyone's been unplugged at some point. And you know when you're unplugged. You know exactly when it happens. It's different. In fact, it's kind of like a story I'm about to tell you. In scuba diving, we have to wear a lot of equipment. There's a dry suit or at least a really thick wetsuit, a hood, a mask, gloves. You have a backpack on, and then on that backpack, sometimes there's one tank. The people scuba diving that I do, we wear 5 tanks. It's a lot of tanks, a lot of stuff, and they teach you to go through these processes to make sure that you're not forgetting anything. It's called BWRAF, Begin With Review and Friend, and basically, it goes like this: B, BCD, is your backpack on? And then W, weights, do you have enough weight to get down? R, releases, are all your buckles and stuff in the right places? Air, is your air turned on? Are you going to go underwater and your air is not turned on? You're going to freak out. And the last one, F, is very, very important. Final review. Do you still want to do this? And do you have your fins on? Very, very important. After doing hundreds and hundreds of dives, people start to kind of get a little bit complacent about that review. They go, oh yeah, my air's on, and yeah, I've got all my stuff, my backpack's on, I've done this hundreds of times, let's just go. And this happened on one particular day. There was a couple divers, and they decided to omit the pre-dive safety check. And they're kind of just going in. They're like, hey, are you good to go? Yep, good to go. And the one diver goes down and is just about to go under when the other diver takes a step forward to release all the air out of their BCD to go down. And they fall forward and all of a sudden the panic just kicks right in because they don't have their fins on. And when you've got as much weight as you wear scuba diving, when you've got multiple tanks and stuff, you sink really fast. And without fins are what you get your power from. They're like the way that you maneuver. You don't use your arms in scuba dive. It's not like swimming. And with these big boots on, if you've ever tried to kick and not use your arms and you've got all this weight and you're just like kicking like this, nothing's happening. And you feel like you're going to drown. How in the world can you drown when you've got all this air all over your body and all you have to do is grab one of these regulators, put it in your mouth, and you'll be totally fine. But without your fins, you're like, I'm going to drown. This scuba diver, it happened a week and a half ago. It happened to be me, and it was terrible. Let me tell you about it. I immediately knew that my fins were not on, and I was having a big problem. My buddy had to come over finally. He was like giving me like a minute, and I managed to get a regulator in my mouth, so I knew I wasn't going to drown, but I looked ridiculous. It was crazy. Finally, he comes over and he grabs me on the back and he lifts me back up. And he goes, "Put your fins on, you dummy." And I was like, "Okay, no problem." But I immediately knew, and sometimes that's what happens with us. We get unplugged and we immediately know it's going wrong. And sometimes you can even drown. And in the book of Matthew, there's a story about this, a guy in the Bible, Matthew 14, 22 through 34, a guy named Peter. He's one of the apostles, and he's Jesus' best friend. And he and the other apostles, Jesus has just been teaching everyone for the entire day. And he says, "Hey guys, get on the boat and go to the other side, and I'll meet you there. I'm going to go up into the hills and pray." So they get in the boat, they go, and then Jesus goes up into the hills, and he begins to pray. And he prays, he talks to God, it's really great. So cool that Jesus modeled that. Hey, I got to go get time with the Father. After he was done, he goes down from the hills, and he sees the boat, and it's in the middle of the lake. So being Jesus, he didn't go, "Oh, well, what's going to happen? What do I got to do?" He just starts walking out onto the lake. Really cool. It's like, hey, the boat's there. That's where I got to go, so I'm going to just go. He's walking on the lake, walking on water, and it's nighttime. It says about the fourth watch, so about 3 a.m., and someone sees him and wakes up all the disciples. "Hey, guys, wake up. What? What? What's going on? There is a ghost walking on the water. Do you want to be awake for this or not?" And they're like, "A ghost? What?" And they all go and look. And they go, "Oh, it's a ghost." They start freaking out on the boat. And Jesus, he can hear them like screaming. I don't know. And he's like, "No, it's me. Don't be afraid." And Peter, oh, Peter's so great. He's awesome. He decides he's gonna test it. "Oh, okay, if you all really are Jesus, if you're not a ghost, then tell me to come walk on the water and meet you out there." Jesus is like, "Okay, come on." I don't know if that's what Peter was expecting, but I can kind of imagine it kind of looked like this. He's like, "Hey, John, hold my hand." Kind of grabs his hand, takes a foot out. "Ooh, okay, don't let go." Then takes another foot out, kind of lets go. And he's got his eyes fixed on Jesus, and he starts to walk on the water. And it's so cool. And then how I imagine it is, it was kind of stormy that night, and Peter's walking out to Jesus, and he feels a little bit of water on his cheek. And he's like, "Oh, okay, don't think about it. Just walk towards Jesus." Then he gets hit by a little bit more water. And that's when he takes his eyes off of Jesus, and he looks. And when he takes his eyes off of Jesus, he starts to sink. And he cries out because now he's drowning. He's in this storm and he's freaking out. And he's like, "Jesus, save me." And you know what's cool is I don't know how far away they were, but Jesus was right there. And he goes, "Hey, got you. But why did you doubt? Why do you have little faith? What's going on?" Pulled Peter up, gets him back in the boat. They go to the other side. And the people, all the other disciples, they see this and they start worshiping Jesus. It was really, really cool. But Peter experienced this drowning thing. He got off task, off focus, and he started to drown. And that happens in our life. In fact, in 1 Timothy 1:19, it says, "Cling to your faith in Christ and keep your conscience clear. For some people have deliberately violated their consciousness. As a result, their faith has been shipwrecked." Have you ever deliberately done something that you knew you shouldn't do? I have, quite a lot of times. Now it causes this: fear, temptation, distractions. There's a time my sister, she wasn't on that picture, but she's in Greece right now, and she is working with refugees from Syria and different parts of the Middle East and Africa who have fled to Greece. And she is in a room, she said, the size of probably about, 8 by 10. And she helps watch all the kids. It's so cool. She says in this 8 by 10 room, sometimes she has up to 40 kids that she's watching. And yeah, and I'm like, "Hannah, only you would know how to handle 40 kids in an 8 by 10 room. That's incredible." But the story I'm remembering, I deliberately was really mean to my sister. And not even like overtly mean. I thought I was being really covert in how I was being mean to her. She was kind of riled up over something. And being her older brother, I knew exactly how to push her buttons to get her to go over the top. And if you have a sibling, I'm sure you know how to get your siblings to go over the top. I knew exactly what to do. And I had a moment there. I was like, should I do this or should I not? No, I'm going to do it. And so I deliberately chose to do it. And ended up with Hannah kicking holes in the drywall at our house. And she got in trouble. I got in trouble. There's a lot of trouble all around. But I really shipwrecked. I was so unplugged. I wasn't even close. And I had shipwrecked my life kind of there a little bit. And she still remembers it to this day. And it actually took a lot of work, not only with Hannah, but with Caleb, kind of repairing a lot of the damage that was done. I didn't really realize, but can totally happen in relationships. So we're going to talk about that. Because, you see, God promised that we could be free. Not free from fear, not free from temptation, but free from the drifting and the drowning. Free from shipwrecking our lives. And I'm going to tell you the things that can keep you from being free and teach you how to be free, to be plugged in to Jesus. The first one, you're going to like this, is F, which is focus on truth. Proverbs 4:23 says, be careful how you think your life is shaped by your thoughts. Be careful how you think your life is shaped by your thoughts. You see, last week my dad talked about how the battle is fought in our minds. Spiritual warfare, helmet of salvation. You notice Peter changed his focus from Jesus to the waves, and that's when he started to sink. Whatever you focus on, that's going to determine your life. My wife and I, Rebecca, she's amazing. She had heard from one of her oboe students, that we should watch this movie called Free Solo. And so we watched it yesterday. And it's about this guy, he mountain climbs, I don't even know what he does. He basically like glides up mountains. It's crazy. He's not harnessed in, no ropes, no nothing. And mountain climbing was his life. Everything he talked about was mountain climbing. It was all he focused on. His girlfriend, his family, his friends, everything. She even at one point said, hey, before you do something, could you consider me and the people that love you before doing that thing? And he said, no. No, I will not. His entire focus was on climbing mountains. And that has determined his life. That's all he does. And it's the same thing for us. Whatever we focus on is going to determine our life. What do we want to focus on? Maybe you're on a diet and you're thinking, hey, ooh, I'm not going to eat that cake. 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 Sure enough, what do? You eat the cake. Because that's all you're focused on, is not eating the cake. People do this in our office. They come and bring it, and they put it right there, and it's like, thanks a lot. I got to practice this every day. It's amazing. Whatever you concentrate on gets you. Maybe you're just texting while you're driving. You can be texting, and wherever you're looking, that's kind of where you're steering. You're like, oh, what? Whoa. All over the road. And shipwreck your life. The key is to turn your mind, your focus on something better, which is the truth. Don't focus on not doing something. Focus on Jesus. The moment you're tempted, turn your mind to truth. Philippians 4:8 says, fill your mind with things that are good and deserve praise, things that are true, noble, right, pure, lovely, and honorable. If you have been in the devotion book that we passed out last week. Day 7 is this verse. And so it's really, really cool, really appropriate that we're talking about it. How do we fill our mind with that? What are these things? It's not rock climbing. It's not scuba diving. It's just Jesus. Who Jesus is. What he did for you. What he did for the world. When we take our focus off of ourselves, because that's really what anything else is, and we put it on God, all of a sudden things start to get easier. It's like, hey, I'm not actually thinking about the cake, I'm thinking about Jesus. Hey, I'm not actually thinking about this thing, I'm thinking about Jesus. And at first, it's really hard. It takes a lot of work. It takes discipline, they might say. And you got to rewire your brain to do this. But after a while, it becomes intuitive. It's like something happens, it's like, oh, Jesus. Focus on Jesus. And soon it's not even that you have to refocus on Jesus, it's you're just focused on Jesus. Because that's what Jesus was doing. He wasn't focused on himself, which is weird because we got to focus on Jesus. He was just focused on doing what God had called him to do. And he was able to navigate life, 100% human, going, hey, got this. Because I know my dad, my God is with me. We need to connect to him. And next week is really cool. We're starting the 20 days of prayer. So that's F. Now, R is reconcile broken relationships. Matthew 5, 23 through 24 says, so if you are offering your gift at the altar, and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar and go. First, be reconciled to your brother, and then come and offer your gift. No power but your own when you hold on to a grudge. And you see, God doesn't delight in offering. He delights in obedience. It says he's not going to help you until you go make things right. No matter how big the offering is, you got to check it and go be obedient. See, David knew this. David had made a big mistake. He had seen Uriah's wife, taken her for himself, had Uriah killed, had a baby with Bathsheba, and then Nathan comes, says, hey, guess what? God knows, it's not a secret, and there's going to be a consequence. And for a week, David was in turmoil and doing a whole bunch of stuff, and he wrote a psalm, Psalm 51, and in there he says, if you delighted in sacrifice, I would give it, but I know that's not the case. So even David knew there's no sacrifice that we can make. We can, though, be obedient. Romans 12, 18 says, as far as your responsibility goes, live at peace with everyone. A clear conscience is essential for connectedness to Christ. For permanent, lasting change, you must maintain a clear conscience. If you don't maintain a clear conscience, then I don't give you much hope. You got to go back and make things right. There's a French proverb that even kind of talks about this. A clear conscience is the softest pillow. What are the broken relationships that keep you up at night? What are the things that have happened where you go, yeah, you know what? That right there is just not quite right. Right there is just not, it's not the best. Those things. Even when, you know, sometimes we'll actually go, well, it's not my fault. They're the one who started it. Goes back to F. Where's your focus? It's on you, not on Jesus. As best as your responsibility goes, live at peace with everyone. Take the first step. Make those relationships right. It could be something, something going on in your family or extended family. Maybe there's something weird, and you just know it's always like a little weird. Make it right. Figure it out. Or it's something big, and there's the person at work who annoys you every single day. And you're like, oh, and it was the last time. And last time you just lost it and told them off, told them how you're really feeling. You got to go and make it right. And this is the hardest step, because to go back and admit to someone that my selfishness caused you a problem, that my guilt caused you grief, is tough. What the Bible says, as much as it is your responsibility, go and live at peace with everyone. Get that clear conscience so you've got God's power in your life, so you're free to be plugged in. Bitterness is being focused on yourself. Holding that grudge is focused on yourself. Living your life free is being focused on Christ and fixing these broken relationships. Both overt and covert were hidden. Like David, he had a broken relationship with God, and he thought he had hidden it, but God saw it. Maybe you're struggling with something, and you've hidden it from your wife or your spouse or from somebody, and you're like, oh, it's not really hurting anybody. It's just my thing. You need to make it right and say, I'm doing this, and I'm sorry. Get that clear conscience. And if it's overt and the other person knows that there's been a break in relationship, yeah, leave that gift, that offering at the altar. and go and make it right today. Because without doing that, without God's power in your life, it's just like no fins. It's not being plugged in. It doesn't work. It doesn't feel good. You're just kind of like going through life going, man, there's something wrong. So reconcile broken relationships. Next one is an E, but this one's pretty cool because you've probably seen we've been doing group signups in the mall, and there's a guy who knows a lot about this next E, and I'm going to invite him up right now to tell us all about this. Pastor Kevin, you're so awesome.
Thank you.
Griffin,
fan club.
Yeah, he really liked the questions you asked earlier.
Yeah. No, it's good, and I get to talk about E, enlist the help of others, and you didn't share that story before of scuba diving, and I get to talk about the buddy who pulled you out of the water and said, hey, dummy, put on your fins, because I love that. We need people in our lives. We're not created, we're not designed to do life alone or by ourselves, and it reminds me of this story I want to share with you really quick, and it happened several years ago, and I was driving home from church, and it was a little bit later. You know, us pastors, we work those late nights, right? Graveyard shift, right? No, it's probably after youth group or something, and it's like 10 o'clock at night. And I'm driving home, and all of a sudden, boom! This deer pops out, and I smash this deer. Like, I had no idea. You know these deer, they just, like, out of nowhere, poof. And, I smashed his head, right? And so he goes flying, right? There's the graphic. And I pull off, and I can't even get out of my door. And so I'm crawling over, and I get out. And sure enough, this police officer pulls up behind me. And we drag the deer off to the side of the road. And all of a sudden, the police officer starts to get pretty excited. And I didn't know what was so exciting. And he goes, hold on. Let me check something. And he goes back to his car and, like, radios in. And he, like, I see him like shaking, like he's excited about something. And he comes back and he goes, okay, guess what? As of last week, this is the first time I've heard of this rule being a law in Washington, but you can now legally harvest what you hit. I go, okay, I'm intrigued. And he goes, no, the deer, if you want it, it's yours. And now I'm not a hunter. I'm not a... that's not my scene. But the police officer, he was just so excited about it. He assured me, he goes, you just take it home and you skin it. And if you can skin it, the meat won't spoil. And you have a couple hours to do this, but if you, and then you just bring to the butcher and you get great meat, you know, from this deer. I said, well, that doesn't sound too hard. So we loaded this deer into my Tucson, right, my hatchback, put it in, and I'm driving home, so I make the call. I go, man, who should I call? Because I have no idea what I'm doing. So I call Pastor Mark. He used to be on staff here. He's like a pastor, right, a mentor and a hunter. And I don't know what he's doing at 10 o'clock, but he's not answering my phone call. And I'm thinking, when I get home, my wife's home, but she's pregnant, and she'd probably frown on this adventure. So who do you call? I called a guy in my community group called Jordan Barr. I said, Jordan, what are you doing? He's like, I'm in bed. It's like, perfect, get up, come into my house. I got a deer. And so he gets up and he meets me at my house and he like has YouTube videos up because he doesn't hunt either. And so I go, check this out. And I open my trunk and the deer's head just like flops out and it's smashed, remember? So it doesn't even look good. And we drag this deer to my backyard and we're trying to figure out what to do. And so we try to hang it up with, you know, I didn't have much rope, but a little bit to skin it. I realized I didn't have a knife. So we had these box knives. So we're trying to skin this deer, and eventually we just go, we can't. We can't. And we... My neighbor's over here too, so in case you want to know why there's bears at our house, so we just dump this thing in a wheelbarrow and drop it off in the woods behind our house. A couple days, there's just like drag marks later, right? And I don't know where the deer went. It was a complete disaster, but a complete adventure at the same time. Here's my point. Here's why I tell you this story. I tell you this story because I know you can all relate, right? We've all hit that deer, and you try to harvest it at one time or another, right? Right. No, I'm kidding. I know you haven't. But when we're driving, right, these deer, they pop out of, they just, all of a sudden they're there. And sometimes, like, as you're going through life, it's a literal deer jumping out, but often it's not. Often it's these things that are popping out of nowhere because all of a sudden you want to get to work, but your kids are just being kids and you can't get out the door. Right? It's you want to get home and that project is keeping you late. It's a sickness. It's any relationship. All of a sudden you just, man, I had my plan. I'm going through life and then it's just, I have no flippers. Right? That's not part of the plan. What happens? And the Bible speaks to this. It's in Ecclesiastes 4:9. It says, two are better off than one because together, if one falls down, the other can help him up. But if someone is alone and falls, there's no one to help him. Interesting, I just heard about this research, and this guy studied 1,200 prominent Christian leaders over the last couple thousand years. And he found that out of those 1,200 leaders, only 30% of those leaders actually finished well in life. And out of those 30% that finished well, one of the primary distinguishing characteristics was they had people in their life who would speak truth and hold them accountable. In fact, their number, they had 10 to 15 people in their life who at some point could speak into it and call them out or encourage them in any way. And so if you today are a follower of Jesus or you just want to finish well in life, right, we can't do this alone. We have to enlist the help of other people around us. And we have this vehicle that we've set up to help some of these relationships be formed, and we call them community groups, right? These are the people that we can lean on. These are the people who know us and who are gonna be there when life gets hard, right? When those deers jump out of nowhere. And Jordan Barr, right? Community group guy. He saw my phone call. He said, man, it's Kevin gonna answer. Not my pastor, not my wife, my community group leader. Right, there are some, my community group member, there are some things that you just need people around you that sometimes the obvious people can't help you with. And in our community groups, really, they do three things, right? The first thing is they connect you with one another, right? Friendships is you. People actually know your name. You come to church, get this, right? And you're actually excited to see somebody because you know their name. Right? You're a friend. They're your friend. So when you see them, like, oh, it's my friend Jeremy. It's like, oh, it's in my community group, and I'm excited. Right? Very much unlike my middle school years where you're just alone in a crowd and no one knows you. It's terrible. I can relate. So number one, you connect with those. Number two is you care for one another. Right? These are the people who are going to be there when life is hard. These are the people who are going to be babysitters when you need a child care sitter. Or if you're in between houses, you're moving houses. We actually lived with our community group, a guy from our community group, for over a month. Right? When you're down, when life is hard, that's the people who's going to come alongside you. And the last thing that these groups do is you grow together. You grow together. Think application and accountability. What we're talking about this weekend is just a talk unless you go home and you actually do something with it. And we get so much information in life that, man, who's the person that's actually sitting next to us going, hey, how are you going to walk that out this week? Okay, that's a good application, but let me hold you accountable as we grow in this area. As iron sharpens iron, man, you get a group of people around you who are sharpening you and making you better. Every person I know that has failed or just tanked their life, it's been because there's been nobody in their life speaking into it, or there were people speaking into it and they just chose to not listen and reject it. So E is enlist the help of others. If you're in a group, man, make that part of your group. Say, guys, we've got to do this together. If you're not in a group, I'll be back there in the mall area after this gathering. Let me know that, hey, I'm kind of interested in enlisting the help of some other people in my life to speak into my life. So thank you for letting me enlisting my help to speak that point. I will now enlist your help to close us out.
Kevin, I remember when you were at work the next day telling me about that deer, and I think my reaction is about the same as when you told me that you guys were going to have your first baby, Benjamin. I didn't believe you at all, but it's such a good story. The last one is another E, spells free, and it's extend your hand to others. How do we be free? We extend our hand to others. We enlist support. We reconcile broken relationships, and we focus on the truth. 2 Corinthians 1:4 says, Christ helps us in all our troubles so that we are able to help others in trouble, using the same help that we ourselves have received from God. We we shouldn't keep the gifts, the talents, and the abilities and the stuff that God has given us to just ourselves. In fact, if we want to be free, it's another way that we take that focus off of ourselves and say, hey, I'm gonna extend my hand, just like Jesus did to Peter. He said, hey, I'm gonna give back. At our Church on the Ridge, we have 95 and 9, where we want to see 95 people step up to be leaders here at Church on the Ridge. There's lots of different ways that you can serve. There's student ministries, there's discipleship, there's on Jeff's team, First Impressions, hospitalities. In fact, if you're looking for a really easy way, next weekend, we're moving the play structure. There's a play structure up in the preschool room, and we've got to move it 15 feet or a little bit more up so that we can create a new classroom behind it, because we're losing the two rooms downstairs. And we need 30 men to sign up to help us move this thing. And so if you're available, it's probably with 30 people, it'll take probably 45 minutes or less. If you're available next weekend after the second gathering, write that there on your connection card, because we'd love to have you come and help us with that. You heard from Griffin today about different missions, about Peru. You can give to that. You can be praying for that. You can talk to him about that. You can get involved. But there's plenty of different ways to extend your hand to others. You see, if Peter, who had that Jesus' hand extended to him, then went and said, okay, now I'm going to keep this all to myself. Thank you, Jesus, for the 3 years. Thanks for extending your hand. Thanks for all the great stuff. Now it's all about me. What? Oh. It just wouldn't have worked. And he knew that. He used his gifts, his talents, and abilities to go and start the church, just like Jesus said, hey, this is what you're here for. I know you've blown it. I know you've taken your eyes off me. It wasn't the first time. There was many times. But guess what? I still created you with this in mind. I still created you with a plan and a purpose. So even though we may shipwreck our lives sometimes, even though stuff may happen, we can still be free. And we can still be free to be plugged into Jesus and extend our hand to other people. Let's all strive to be free in our life, connected to God, connected to each other, and ultimately serving the world. Let's pray. God, thank you that we can be free, that you created us for freedom, and that by following these things, that, Lord, we can get the focus off of us and onto you. We love you, God. Pray this in your mighty name. Amen.
Thank you again for tuning into this week's talk. If you want to hear more from Church on the Ridge, check us out on our website at churchontheridge.org/talks or subscribe to our channel wherever you listen to podcasts. We also want to keep you inspired and in the know about what's going on here at Church on the Ridge. Check out our Facebook and Instagram pages where you will receive daily content that will help encourage you in your walk with Christ and keep you informed about what's going on at Church on the Ridge. Until next time, have a great week. Oh,